Over and over again, Dr. Wansink and other individuals who do this kind of studying have discovered that we have mindless eating. The second you put things in a big bowl and serve it with a big spoon, you eat more than when it's in a small bowl and served with a small spoon. So there are serving size studies that have been done all over the United States. And these studies continue to emphasize that even the people that are smart, even the people that are professionals, are individuals that will eat more when it's simply a bigger bowl. They created an ice cream social. And what they invited to the people they invited to this ice cream social were professors from the nutritional science division and hardworking PhD students. The ice cream social had, again, two groups. They were either given a medium-sized 17-ounce bowl or a large-sized 34-ounce bowl when they were invited to go through the line and take as much as they wanted, four different kinds of ice cream. They also varied the size of the scoops that they put in the ice cream. Some of the scoops held 2 ounces, some of the scoops held 3 ounces. When people reached the end of the line, one of the experimenters handed them a survey, and then they weighed their bowl of ice cream. All the while, they had cameras rolling. You know, I mean, these are professionals. Surely they wouldn't be affected by something as mundane as the size of the bowls and the size of the scoops. They think sleep, lecture, study, and eat nutrition. They've written top-level journals, you know, research papers. None of it mattered. Those that were given the huge bowls dished out huge amounts. In fact, they dished out 31% more, 127 calories more of ice cream. But it only got worse if you gave them a big scoop. If you gave them a large bowl and you gave them a 3-ounce scoop, they dished out 57% more ice cream than those given the smaller bowl and the smaller scoops. Big dishes, big spoons, or big trouble. And as the size of the dish increases, so does the amount that we scoop into them. You know, when I first started traveling to Europe, I was always astounded when I went to dinner that they served everything on a salad plate. Well, I thought it was a salad plate because it was a small diameter plate. I was used to these frisbee size plates that we had in America. But we serve ourselves more on a big plate because it makes the food look small. If you take a medium-sized hamburger and you serve it to a person on a saucer, then they are going to estimate it as having almost 20% more calories as if you serve it to them on a normal-sized plate. The same thing is true with desserts. When you present it on a large plate, people underestimate the number of calories in a piece of cake or a piece of pie compared to when it's presented on a small plate. Now, we know that the serving sizes are very different from what they used to be. We've supersized everything. We've big gulped everything. When we begin to look at bowl bias, at plate bias, we start to get a clue as to how we can trick ourselves into eating less. And it's not just what's on the plate. It's the packages themselves. Just the size of the box changes how we eat. Just the picture on the front of the box changes how we eat. They did a study with Cheez-Its. And they showed people a picture of a box or a mock-up of a box that had a whole bunch of Cheez-Its on the front of it. And then they showed them another box that just had a couple of Cheez-Its on the front of it. And then they gave each of these college students in the study a small bag with 30 Cheez-It crackers, and they told them they could eat them while they filled out the survey. The students who saw the boxes that had all the crackers on the front ate more of them. We're getting cues from packaging. We're getting cues from spoon sizes and bowl sizes. We want to take the middle ground. We always order the medium. Doesn't matter how much is in things. We don't want to be a pig, so we don't want to order the extra large, and we don't want to be chintzy, so we don't want to order the small. Most of us order the medium. It's called the golden mean. You know, if McDonald's wanted people to buy more 12-ounce soft drinks, calling it small wouldn't help. The only way that they could sell more 12-ounce soft drinks is if they inserted an 8-ounce small. Because if they inserted an 8-ounce small on the choice, then people would want the medium, which would be the 12-ounce. No, not everybody wants a 32-ounce drink. Even when all sizes of the drink cost the same, a trend that's showing up in the restaurant industry today, a little over 60% will get a medium. We expect people to take everything they can get for free, but they don't. They know how much they want. So what happens is that when you stack your glasses in the shelf and you put a bunch of 6-ounce juice glasses on the shelf, hardly anybody will use them. But if you see the 8-ounce glass sitting next to the 6-ounce glass, the 8-ounce glass seems like the right size. And then you don't grab the 16-ounce glass. The same thing is true with the wine glasses. When you put those small wine glasses that used to be popular years ago right next to the regular size wine glasses, it makes the medium size glasses look hugely generous. Over and over again, we see that people are responding to cues that don't have anything to do with appetite. They don't have anything to do with even the knowledge that we have about food. If you take somebody into a buffet line and you track how much they take of the different foods compared to the people, you know, that are next to them, the people that were in front of them in the line. If the people that were in front of you in the line in the buffet took a lot of food, then the person behind them will also take more food. We are being cued by what other people are doing. And so one of the first things that we have to do to keep from being fooled by food is to know it. And to know that smaller plates and smaller forks and smaller spoons are all going to make a difference, no matter how silly that sounds. But one of the other things that we want to do is start filling up on low-energy, high-volume foods. Now, there are some of you out there that are of normal weight or are lean, and you're thinking that this show is tagging just a part of the population, but two-thirds of us are overweight or obese. And if you happen to be one of the individuals that's not overweight or obese, that doesn't mean that that isn't going to change in the future. And it also doesn't mean that there isn't somebody else in your household that needs help with this. I had a grandma in my practice a week ago, and she was saying how she was preparing for the family coming for the holiday weekend. And she had stocked up on apple juice and grape juice and things like that to give to the kids, so that they wouldn't be asking for soda. And I said, well, you know, if the choice is a soda pop or a glass of juice, the glass of juice is certainly superior. But if the choice is a glass of juice or a piece of fruit and a glass of water, the piece of fruit and the glass of water are superior. So stocking your fridge with fruit juice may not be doing your kids a favor. So those of you that are of normal weight and are lean, some of you want to gain weight. And over again, you're going to find out that using food concentrates is a way to gain weight. But it's using food concentrates that causes many of us to gain more weight than we need. So eat less may be the mantra of the weight loss industry. It may be the mantra of dieting. But it turns out that the amount of food that you eat is pretty much the same all the time in terms of its weight. We have a tendency to eat the same weight of food at virtually every meal. But when we look at foods that are low in energy, meaning they're high in fiber and they're high in water content, we fill up and we get a lot of very low energy density. But when we do that, we get filled up. This consistent amount of food by weight that we eat each day, regardless of the number of calories and the nutrients in food, we put it on the scale and it weighs about the same amount. So if a lot of those foods are very calorie dense, then we're going to be having more calories at the end of the day. But when we have low energy, high volume fruits and vegetables, green salads, vegetable soups, tomatoes, carrots, cucumbers, oranges, berries, melons, we're going to have a greater sense of satiety and fullness during the day. You know, always look at your plate as being half filled with fruits or vegetables. And you know, my rule is fruit, eat it alone or leave it alone. One of the very few food combining rules left over from the research that Shelton did almost 90 years ago is the fruit, eat it alone or leave it alone rule. I had a client in clinic that was eating an apple for dessert at lunch and an apple for dessert at dinner in a way to try to get him to stay off of the cakes and the cookies. And his wife complained that he had become a gas factory. And so we took the apples away as the dessert and the gas factory stopped. Now he has his apple at 4 o'clock in the afternoon and it doesn't create the same problem. Fruit is very simple to digest. When we put fruit on top of more complicated food that's going to stay in the stomach longer, the fruit has a tendency to begin fermentation in the digestive tract, actually in the stomach, and the first byproduct of fermentation is gas. Now, if you happen to be somebody that's been cutting a banana on your cereal for 30 years and it doesn't bother you at all, well, then keep doing it. So when I talk about half of your plate being fruits and vegetables, what's really true is I'm saying half of your plate should be vegetables, the other half protein and starch. And sometimes that starch is vegetables, and sometimes that starch is grain. But when we look at high water content foods, they offer a lot of satiety. They're low in energy density, meaning they're low in calories, but they're high in water content, like lettuce and oranges and apples and, you know, kale and spinach. I'm going to make collard greens tonight with dinner. These high water foods are more filling, but simply drinking a glass or two of water before the meal doesn't fill you up in the same way. You know, there's a lot of diets that say, well, drink a glass of water before the meal and it'll cut your appetite. I've never seen that to be true. I think people should drink a glass of water before meals because that way your stomach is completely hydrated and you have less of a tendency to drink while you're eating. You know, most of the people who drink while they're eating are under-chewing their food and they're using their liquid to swallow it down. But if you drink a full glass of water before your meal, then your thirst is taken care of, and you're less likely to keep sipping while you're eating. If you're going to drink with your meal, make sure you drink something hot so it doesn't slow your digestion down. Because every time you're taking a sip out of that iced tea, because I know you're not drinking soda because you're a listener of No Nonsense Nutrition, you lower the temperature of your stomach, and when you lower the temperature of your stomach, it takes longer for your food to digest. There was a study done in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition that demonstrated that water that is served as a beverage with food doesn't affect fullness, but high water foods like soup and lettuce salad absolutely is effective. Water quenches thirst, not hunger. You might feel full after drinking a big glass of water, but it leaves the stomach quickly, so the feeling of fullness doesn't really last. So that's one of the reasons that using vegetables as appetizers is a really good idea. You know, one of the simpler things that can help people lose weight is to eat a bowl of vegetable soup as the beginning of the meal. If you have a cup of vegetable soup or a green salad before the meal, it takes the edge off your hunger, and then you control what you eat at the meal. And of course, that meal is on a small plate. Now, if you have a high energy density starter course, you know, if you're having, I was at one of our local bistros last week, one of the few places in Sarasota that you can eat on the water, and somebody was having coconut shrimp as their starter. If you're having a high-calorie, high-density starter like that, it's certainly not going to solve the problem of eating too many calories. If you're having a salad drenched in a high-calorie dressing or a thick, creamy soup that's laden with fat, that's not going to do it. But eating vegetable soup 15 minutes before a meal will result in 20% fewer calories being consumed at the meal. The same thing will be true if you have a small vegetable salad. So those celery sticks and carrot sticks and radishes and snow pea pods and things that you can munch on before the meal are real mealtime solutions. You know, when we put together that plate, and I always talk about the divided plate I had in grade school. Half of the plate is non-starchy vegetables, a quarter of the plate is protein, and a quarter of the plate is starchy vegetable or a whole grain. I didn't grow up with that. Growing up with a Scottish father, we had boiled potatoes on the table every night, every night, every night, 365 days a year. The only time we didn't have boiled potatoes is when we had spaghetti. Didn't matter what the meal was, there had to be a bowl of boiled potatoes on the table. So that was a very, very common starch. I don't remember eating rice at all until I was probably 20 years old. And you have those same cultural influences. We have less of it now than we had when I was growing up because people have more of a world palate. But, you know, I was 18 when I had my first piece of asparagus. All of us have cultural things that happened at our table that cultivated within us our habits for food. So the only starter that we ever had in our house was iceberg lettuce salad. Iceberg lettuce salad with Roca blue cheese on the top. Every once in a while, my mother would do something else. But we had a few slices of tomato on top, and that was pretty much it. And now I realize with every meal, it doesn't just help to fill up your plate, it helps to fill up your stomach. When you replace a high-fat meat lasagna with a low-calorie vegetable-rich lasagna, you are making one step. Low-energy entrees always prove successful. And now you combine that with information about how we get fooled by food, and we're going to put that veggie lasagna on a smaller plate, and we're going to have a big step forward in having food control. Fruits and vegetable purees can bulk up all kinds of dishes, from casseroles to bread to meatloaf. I made spaghetti last week, and in sautéing onions and celery and mushrooms, and then adding that to the spaghetti sauce, putting it on a real small amount of spaghetti, barely what I would have in my open hand, my cupped hand. That would be more accurate. I took a chicken sausage and cut the chicken sausage up into coins and fried it in a pan and put that on top of the spaghetti and the meat sauce and served it with a green salad. So I had buried a whole lot of vegetables directly into that spaghetti sauce. And that is an easy way to bulk up a dish by adding more veggies anywhere we can. We can't put potatoes and peas and winter squash and corn on that list. Those are the starchy vegetables. When we're talking about the very low energy density and the low energy density things, we want to take potatoes, peas, winter squash, and corn and keep those portions small, half or two-thirds of a cup. When we're looking at the medium energy density, anything from bread to the fat-free baked snacks, the cheeses, the nuts, the high-fat meat and dairy, those things, we just want to keep the portions small. We're not saying don't have them. I cooked a goose breast yesterday for our special dinner. That's a novelty, not something I've done before. But when I was at one of the local meat markets buying some duck legs, which are a favorite in our house, I saw that goose breast and saw that'll be something a little different. I fixed it with wild rice. I put the tops of all the celery I had into the wild rice and took them out at the end so the celery had flavored the wild rice. And I cooked it with 2 cups of water and 1 cup of vegetable broth, so there was a little bit of vegetable broth flavoring the wild rice, and just some steamed broccoli. That was our dinner last night. So half of my plate. And when I say steamed broccoli, I'm talking about a tree of broccoli. I'm not talking about a few little florets here. That together with a salad, and the green salad was lettuce, and I had cooked some beautiful golden beets, just rubbed a little bit of olive oil on them, put them in a baking pan and stuck them in the toaster oven first thing in the morning so I wouldn't heat up the kitchen later in the day, cooked them for about 45 minutes, put one little slice of goat cheese and sprinkled that on the top and did some fig balsamic dressing that I had been gifted with. So I know you wanted to come to my house for dinner, didn't you? So here's green salad with golden beets and goat cheese. Here's the tree of broccoli, about a half a cup of wild rice cooked in those veggie broth, and a couple of little slices of fresh goose breast. And probably there was less than 2 ounces of it on the plate. That's the kind of meal that we're looking for, is a meal that has been modified in its energy density. When you're making pancakes or quick breads and you put in some canned pumpkin, you're going to be adding vegetables to something that you don't usually add vegetables to, like pancakes. When you saute or chop vegetables and add it into your meatloaf, when you put butternut squash puree in your macaroni and cheese, you're decreasing calorie density and you're increasing nutrient density. So the strategies of fighting hunger in pounds with low energy foods are really a very big part of the strategies that we can use to keep food from fooling us. You know, one of the few newsletters that I, well, actually a couple of them that I truly enjoy, Environmental Nutrition, which is a newsletter of food, nutrition, and health, and the Center for Science and the Public Interest's Nutrition Action newsletter, you know, I have to thank them for a lot of help in doing these shows because they trigger in my mind with their well-researched and well-written articles some of the things that I share with you. So I become your clipper service. And that happens, well, every time you go up on Plus News. You know, if you've never gone on Plus News/podcast and listened to dozens and dozens of the shows that have been here on WSLR, you've got an opportunity to do it today. I'm always delighted when somebody comes up and says, oh, I love that show that you did 2 weeks ago on kidneys with Dr. Fred Harvey, and I put it on my Facebook site and shared it with all of my friends. Thank you for doing that. Thank you for caring enough about your friends to want to share health with them. So I thank the Environmental Nutrition Newsletter and the Center for Science and the Public Interest of sharing their ideas with me. But let's think about some more things that we can do to keep food from fooling me. You know, I've always said that for every adjective that you add to an entree, you add $5. You know, if you go to some of the inexpensive restaurants, it says seafood fillet. But if you go to a fancy restaurant, it says succulent Italian seafood fillet. It sells more with fancy names. When chocolate cake becomes Belgian Black Forest cake, you sell more of it. Over and over again, we see that if there's 6 different colors of jelly beans in the bowl, people will eat 40% more jelly beans than if there are only 4 colors of jelly beans in the bowl. That's crazy, isn't it? You think I'm going to eat the same amount of jelly beans no matter what. But the more colors there are, the more you eat. When we get served a brownie on a beautiful china plate, We will rate its taste higher than if the brownie was served on a napkin. Presentation matters. You know, when I talk about never eating out of a box, never eating out of a bag, always making sure that you are plating your food on a small plate and a nice plate. You know, I go into people's homes and they have this beautiful china put behind glass in a china cabinet. Or they have grandma's china stuffed on the top shelf in the kitchen and they never get it out except for Christmas. But what's true is we should use the good stuff every day because it makes us think that the food is better. We have to stop using serving dishes on the plate. We need to plate the food in the kitchen. As soon as we put the serving dishes on the table, rather than leaving them on the counter in the kitchen, men will eat almost 30% more food and women will eat about 10% more food if the serving dish is left on the table. So yesterday when you had your feast and everybody came over and you put the serving dishes on the table, people overate. Who knew? If you sit and eat with someone who eats slowly, you will actually eat slower yourself. My mother was a speed eater. I learned to eat based on her pace. She was always the first one finished at the table. So pacing yourself down is really a good idea. I love the study that was done at one of the chicken wing joints because they did a thing where as soon as somebody ate a chicken wing, they took the bones away. And as soon as somebody ate another chicken wing, they took the bones away. And then at another table, they left the bones so that people could see how many they've eaten. And people ate fewer chicken wings if they could see the bones of the wings they'd already eaten, instead of having the bones disappear as soon as they finished them. If you eat a bag of stuff that says low fat, you'll eat more than if the label didn't say low fat. It's as if it gave you permission to eat more. And yet, when we actually look at how much lower low fat really is, as far as labels are concerned, it's going to really shock you. Or at least it shocked me. The regular version of the fig cookies has 56 calories in a cookie. The reduced fat version has 51. Hello? Three chocolate chip cookies that are the regular version have 160 calories, whereas the reduced fat version has 150. 2 tablespoons of regular peanut butter, 191 calories. 2 tablespoons of reduced fat peanut butter, 187 calories. Vanilla frozen yogurt measured in a cup, the regular one had 104 calories, the reduced fat had 100 calories. Chicken noodle soup, a cup of it had 120 calories in the regular version, and the reduced fat version, get ready for this, had 140. The chicken noodle soup actually had 20 more calories in a cup in the reduced fat version than it did in the regular version. So over and over again, fat may matter, but calories are what really counts. If we ask people to take a scenic walk before they had dinner, just go on a leisurely scenic walk around the lake. We took another group of people and we said, we want you to go on an exercise walk around the lake. So people that went on the scenic walk walked in one direction around the lake, and people who went on an exercise walk walked in another direction around the lake. The people who went on the scenic walk ate more dinner and ate more dessert than after they went on an exercise walk, even though it was an identical walk. So when we look at all of the ways that we affect our choices, and a whole lot of things, we think we're too smart for this stuff to get to us, but it sure does. One of the things we find out is that 80% of the food that we purchase or eat comes from a 3-mile radius around where we live. That's your food radius. Look at what causes you to overeat. Your home, where you work, the grocery store where you shop, your couple favorite restaurants. Just small changes in those things can make a difference. We've talked before about the fact that you should never go to the grocery store hungry. You'll always spend more money and buy more stuff if you go to the grocery store hungry. Turns out that's not true. Turns out that they don't buy more or spend more if they're hungry, but they don't buy as many healthy foods when they're hungry. If you eat your meal before you go to the grocery store, you're a lot more likely to buy the vegetables to cut up for the stir fry and the chicken breasts that you're going to cook. But if you go to the store when you're hungry, you're a lot more likely to buy the frozen meal of the already prepared chicken breast and the vegetables. You're a lot more likely to buy the frozen food and the breakfast cereals and the hamburger helper and the candy and the crackers. And you're likely to buy less fruit and vegetables and healthy dairy foods. If you keep a bowl of candy sitting on your desk, I've got a client, she's a receptionist at a golf community, keeps a bowl of chocolate sitting on her desk. The average person who does that will eat 125 calories. So in 5 days of work, you know, that's 625 calories. You know, that's 2,500 calories in a month extra, a whole extra day of food every month if you let it sit on your desk. All you do is take that bowl and move it 6 feet away. You're going to eat less. They even found out that if you put the candy in a clear bowl, you'll eat more of it than if you put it in a white bowl so that you can't see through and have it sitting there in the bowl going, come and get me, come and eat me. We know that all of these little teeny tiny ways that the environment triggers us to eat more food are things that we can become conscious of, but we have to take action in order to feel satisfied. How much will it take for somebody to feel satisfied? Will 90% of the brownie make you feel satisfied? Will 80% of the candy bar be enough? So in a study, they gave people either a large or a small portion of chips, a large or a small portion of apple pie, a large or a small portion of chocolate. The small portion was only 20% of the food in the large portion. People ate 135 calories of the small portion and 235 calories of the large portion. But 15 minutes later, they rated themselves as equally satisfied. And yet there was 100 calories difference in what they ate. You know, once you swallow something, there's not much memory of how much you ate. The residual taste in your mouth lasts for a little while. So 15 minutes later, you might remember that it tastes good, but you don't remember how many bites you had. When we begin to be conscious, we can start to realize that even where we eat in a restaurant makes a difference. When you make an area darker by having the offset lighting and putting in the quieter music, people come to the restaurant and they put them in one of the two places in the study. They put them in the part of the restaurant with the offset lighting and the quiet music, or they put them at the counter with the rock music and the bright lights and the hard surfaces. They all ate exactly the same food because they ordered ahead of time. But people who ate in the soft light ate 18% fewer calories, and they rated the food in the restaurant more appealing because they spent 9 minutes longer in the restaurant. They were more relaxed. They ate slowly. Their satiety clues caught up with them. They might have said, I guess I'm full. Maybe it's also that when they got the French fries, 9 more minutes, they got a little colder and they don't taste as good when they're colder. So will that work at home? Can you turn on some quiet music and turn the TV down and use candlelight instead of fluorescent and make a more relaxed environment? You eat more slowly, you like the food more, and you end up eating less. You know, and I tell people in my clinic when they're wanting to take some pounds off that they can't eat out of a box or a bag. They can't eat standing up. They can't eat in the car. You know, there are things that they need to do strategy-wise. My mother always said there are no calories in food eaten while you're standing at the kitchen sink. She also told me that broken cookies don't have any calories because the calories fall out. Needless to say, my mother was not a scientist. But these habits are silent. These habits, these food cues are happening to us all the time. And we're completely unconscious about it. And even when we're asked about it, we deny that it makes an effect on us. And yet all of the studies indicate that it makes an effect on us. So Brian Wansink up at Cornell, thanks a lot for your work. I do recommend his book, Mindless Eating, Why We Eat More Than We Think. It's about a 5 or 6 year old book now, but I think he's got a new one coming out. You know, we believe that we overeat because food tastes really good or because we're really hungry. But those are kind of the last things that influence how much we eat. We're a nation of mindless eaters. If there's nothing to stop us from grabbing something to eat, we'll keep doing it until something tells us to stop. So I thank Brian Wansink for that quote. And I invite you to think about using more of those low-energy, high-volume foods, namely fruits and vegetables, that can help you lose weight. When we fight hunger and pounds with low-energy foods, we'll start with vegetables as appetizers. I have a client right now that I suggested she eat a bowl of vegetable soup about 15 minutes before she's ready to have her meal. And she's down about 16 pounds now just since the Christmas holidays. Having that bowl of vegetable soup or that green salad before the meal helps you take the edge off of hunger and fills you up so you can control what you eat at the meal and your new smaller plate. Just remember not to drench the salad with a high-calorie dressing or make a soup that is thick and creamy and laden with fat. I've always said you can't eat too many vegetables. You know, when you look at all the colors that the vegetable kingdom gives us, those red tomatoes and those purple cabbages, orange carrots and the green, so many things. The blue blueberries that I had in my breakfast fruit this morning. Eat a rainbow every day. Try to fill your plate with color. When I had that green lettuce with the golden beets and the white goat cheese and the brown balsamic dressing, the tan-colored goose, the bright green broccoli, the beige and brown wild rice. It's a colorful plate. It's an inviting plate. We have a tendency to beige ourselves out too much and eat too much brown. We can wake up in the morning and have a brown cup of coffee and a brown bagel and go to lunch and have a brown burger on a brown bun with a brown soda and a brown French fry. In the afternoon, have a brown glass of iced tea with some brown pretzels and go to dinner and have a brown steak and a brown potato with a brown roll and a brown piece of pie. And yeah, it's silly, isn't it? But it makes us realize that we don't eat a rainbow every day. And the rainbow is the way that we can get lots of those low-energy foods. So think about more non-starchy vegetables and unsweetened fruits and broth-based soups. Eat them as much as possible anytime, and it will help you to achieve the goals that you have. You know, being slim doesn't always mean healthy. And fitness and fatness, well, a lot of times they can go together. But when people obsess about the fact that they want to get some weight off, and they think that they're going to have to deny themselves and starve themselves. You know, what's true is the best diet in the world is the one that you don't even know you're on. Because you're just choosing well. And that's really what no-nonsense nutrition is all about. It's all about learning to choose well.